Sometimes life brings you a moment you always will remember. Some of nature's most beautiful creations framed by places we know and cherish. And aren't we in luck that some of life's most memorable scenes are right here at home, all together at Alabama the Beautiful, the group on Facebook where the eye captures the moment. And it really does last forever.
Be sure to check out AlabamaTheBeautifulMagazine.com.
With 6 convenient locations to serve you, Bankston Motorhomes is your local RV dealer. They have some of the top brand name RVs for sale at incredible prices. Whether you are looking for an awesome RV for a long-term road trip or a smaller or more lightweight RV for the occasional weekend getaway, Bankston Motorhomes is here to provide you with some outstanding options and deals that you just won't find anywhere else. For more information, go to BankstonMotorhomes.com or visit one of their 6 convenient locations in Huntsville, Florence, Warrior, Albertville, and Ardmore in Nashville, Tennessee. That's Bankston Motorhomes.
North Alabama is full of adventure. If you love food, we've got it. If you love festivals, we've got them. If you love the outdoors, we've got plenty of places to explore. Whatever you love, we're sure to have something for you. For all things North Alabama, check out northalabama.org.
Hello, this is Ethan Lybrand, and you're listening to The Mark White Show. I'm the NBA National Ambassador, and to show your support to kids like me, go to NBA.org.
Hey everybody, this is Daryl Worley, and you're listening to The Mark White Show. Hey, step up and make a difference like he does.
Hey y'all, this is Jeff Foxworthy, and you, yeah, you can make a huge difference in somebody's life. You just may not have figured out how yet, and that's why you're listening to The Mark White Show.
Hi, this is Maggie Peterson. I played Charlene Darling on The Andy Griffith Show, and you are listening to The Mark White Show.
Hi folks, this is Ricky Skaggs, and you're listening to The Mark White Show.
Hello, I'm Gene Stallings, and this is The Mark White Show. Get off the sideline and get involved and make a difference in your community.
You are listening to The Mark White Show. My daddy is your host, Mark White. Something
good today. Welcome to another edition of The Mark White Show. I'm glad that you can be with us as I once again come to you from Huntsville, Alabama. U.S. Paralympics, that's what we've been able to enjoy when it comes to the cycling. We were at the time trials earlier on Saturday, and then they had the race on Sunday. I had the opportunity while I was visiting with Ricardo Rincon to meet Adam Finney, and Adam is from Chicago, Illinois. Welcome to the Mark White Show, Adam.
Thank you very much for having me, Mark.
Absolutely. Adaptive sports, you were sharing with me and my wife about your journey when it comes to adaptive sports, and it started around 15 years old in Chicago?
About 15 years ago. I was about 23. I got hurt in 05. And then I found cycling just kind of as something to do to stay active. And then from there, I got put in touch with RIC, the Rehab Institute of Chicago, which is now the Abilities Lab. Mm-hmm. And really, cycling and adaptive sports kind of took off and started evolving from there in like around 2009 or 10. And it was with a fundraiser that they have called the Sky Rise. And it was a tower climb for the Willis Tower. And that really got me involved in the sports program through the hospital.
You were describing that particular race, pretty remarkable. And to think about the fact that at 23 years old, you were starting to get into adaptive sports and really to find yourself something to do. And the involvement that you have now is a whole nother level, to go from that point of racing up the Sears Tower to today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm in Tucson now on a scholarship at the University of Arizona. We race on their hand cycle team through the DRC, the Disability Resource Center. So it's amazing how far, you know, the journey has come and the people I've met in adaptive sports. And yeah, it's a remarkable what it's done for me.
Yes, and when you think back to being 23 years old and that moment when your life changed, it may have been that you didn't realize the community was out there, but I do want to encourage people who find themselves in that situation, even myself or anybody else, who it could happen tomorrow, it could happen today, and to know that there is a community that exists that is a great community. I've met a lot of men and women who are part of this community, and it's really close-knit. people know each other. As you mentioned, it can be a really small community when it comes to cycling.
Yeah.
And you really do build a relationship with these people.
Yeah, absolutely. You kind of see the same faces at the races. But like you said, it's finding something to get you out of the house. A lot of the people go through similar struggles as you. So it's nice to just get out, kind of forget about, you know, the worries of the day, as we like
yes.
to say, you know, and kind of, I was a carpenter right out of high school, framing houses. So, you know, I'd never thought of, you know, disabled sports or, you know, adaptive sports before my accident. So like you said, it was, you know, really nice finding hobbies and then even competitive, you know, there's kind of what you want in adaptive sports. If you want to do it to, you know, do a 5K turkey trot with the kids on Thanksgiving, there's a group for that. And mm-hmm. if you want to, you know, weight race on a world-class level, there's also, you know, opportunities for that. So I think that's what's nice, is just kind of finding your niche and the support system that helps you along the way. And it's, like you said, a remarkable community with a lot of great members, you know, and friends that you meet that become lifetime friends. And it's, you know, I couldn't have picked a better sport. I think cycling, you know, I've done marathons as well and a few triathlons and stuff, but cycling definitely has my heart.
When I was talking to Ricardo, he was sharing about finding out about the University of Arizona when he was in Mexico City, Mexico, and he actually said he started the search for it and then found the University of Arizona. For you, as you were in Chicago, Illinois, how did you find out about the University of Arizona and connect with them so that now you're on one of their teams?
Yeah, so we used to travel to Phoenix. They have a big bike race every February called Valley of the Sun. So we would travel to Tucson. We have a few friends there just to get out of Chicago winters and
I hear you.
You know, and ride bikes for a few weeks. And so after a few years, Ricky was actually at school and kind of told Coach, you know, about me. And so at one of those races, I got connected through the school and eventually, you know, got offered the opportunity and decided to make the move from, you know, the Windy City out to the hot desert. But I couldn't have picked a better place. I mean, cycling's huge cycling community. We have like 120 miles of paved protected bike paths, so it's safe to ride, and it's just, you know, the community welcomes you, and it's just a good place. And then the school, you know, the U of A is an amazing school, and the resources through them are also incredible, because we offer a variety of sports. I know we have tennis and wheelchair basketball for men's and women's teams, and rugby, triathlon. So there's a variety of sports that the school offers, as well as, you know, of course, the educational opportunity is amazing.
And you earned a scholarship
yeah.
to the University of Arizona.
Yeah, yeah.
How absolutely. Did that come about?
Just kind of through Coach. It's a great organization called the Nielsen Foundation. Offers a lot of scholarships. I think they are in 10 universities around the country, but they also, you know, I know RIC gets a lot of grants and stuff through them for sports. So it's a great organization. Unfortunately, it's just for spinal cord injuries. So, you know, amputees and stuff don't benefit from it, but there are other resources at the school that kind of compensate for those situations. But I was fortunate enough to get the Nielsen scholarship, and then that helps pay for school and, you know, the supplemental supplies, books, and other resources that you need along the way as well.
We're close to the same age. I'm yep. 42, you're 39. And you think about being 23 years old, and there's a younger generation coming up, and there are new injuries every day. Through the program at the University of Arizona and in that community, have you been able to connect with some younger people and had an opportunity to maybe encourage them as they're coming up through adaptive sports?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say, like, my journey's definitely, you know, unique. Like you said, you don't hear about too many 39-year-olds getting college scholarships.
Right.
And so I am one of the older athletes on the team or in the program. So it is a good way for me, like you said, to meet, you know, guys like Ricardo. I've you know, he's on the hand cycle team, and just to kind of help mentor him and, you know, give him like thoughts, because I've been, you know, around doing it a little bit longer, and just as far as like the racing and stuff. So yeah, I think just kind of showing some of the kids, you know, like they say, the ropes and stuff like that is beneficial. And I also enjoy giving back. I used to volunteer a lot in Chicago and coach with Dare to Try as a paratriathlon group out of Chicago as well. So I think just, you know, giving back is what the community need. You know, I've got a lot of good mentors that I've met along the way, and it's just kind of, you know, that trickle down effect. You know, you give back kind of what you learned and kind of help everybody out.
Well, you're definitely in a unique position, and people who have certain experiences, they are, yeah, when it comes to connecting with certain people. Whereas I may want to connect with someone who's younger that is in adaptive sports or going through a major challenge in their life when it comes to physical challenges, I may not be able to connect with them in the way that you could or Ricardo could. And so I think about those who are coming up who need that encouragement from someone that they can physically see going through, looking similar to them and having success doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's kind of what helped. I know when I was first injured, we had a mentor program in Chicago at the Rehab Institute of Chicago. And like you said, it was kind of nice seeing, you know, guys come into your room that had a job or a family and know, like, you know, life, you could still do life, you know, and life can be what you want and what you make of it. And like you said, I definitely, like, seeing that definitely helps you in your own life vision, like what you want. And especially at a young age, you know, it's, you know, school's a great opportunity. So like guys like Ricardo and these younger generation, you know, getting an education is definitely key. So having opportunities like Arizona, and I know Illinois has a program, and I believe Alabama, there's a few schools out there that are really, and I think that's what's key, is, you know, definitely the education for these individuals.
Right.
And then, like you said, meeting, you know, sports is, you know, a hobby, or being competitive is definitely, you know, just a bonus to the whole community.
And I think bringing awareness right now as we speak helps, because right now there may be someone out there who didn't realize that there's a program at the University of Arizona the way it is.
Absolutely.
Or the University of Alabama or these other places that have adaptive sports. And maybe it is opening their eyes to these programs, and they can start looking into it. They can research. Maybe they know somebody that's close to them that doesn't have that information. If they're listening right now, they now have some tools.
Or Challenged Athletes Foundation.
Or Challenged Athletes Foundation.
Because they do a lot of camps. Yes. And like you said, these smaller towns, if you're not in Chicago or L.A. or these big cities, you know, stuff like this is where they hear things and start researching. And
absolutely.
The dots connect that way. So, yeah, it's definitely beneficial to you know, all connections are good connection.
And I imagine you've connected some dots even here in Huntsville, Alabama at the U.S. Paralympics, as you get to the camaraderie that's here, to get to be friends and get to connect with the people here. There are some things that you're going to learn every single time you go somewhere.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, you know, Paul, you know, Schulte from Top End, is, I've known him or known the name for many years, but it's nice to actually put a face with the name and meet him. And like you said, there's always, you know, connections, and you're always learning, you know, every day you're learning and learning from different people. So like you said, these events are great, and especially, you know, these are like some of the top athletes in the world, so seeing how they perform and stuff is a good opportunity for everybody, even a newcomer, you know, even if this is your first race, don't be discouraged that you're 8 minutes behind or whatever your time is, you know, like, just enjoy the experience and learn from it, and I think that's the important part.
And as you mentioned, Top End, and that was the great segue for the next interview that's coming up as I get to talk to some folks from Top End. And Adam Feeney, thank you for joining me here on the Mark White Show today.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. I really appreciate you having me and being out here and getting to meet your family. So thanks for spending the day with us.
Absolutely. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right. If you'll stick with us, we're going to have some folks from Top End coming up. You are listening to the Mark White Show, and I'm your host, Mark White.
A little wink, a pat on the back, a big old hug, a little laugh. We can make a difference. All we have to do is try. Yeah, every day's a chance to change somebody else's life. Let's all do something good today.
North Alabama is full of adventure. If you love food, we've got it. If you love festivals, we've got them. If you love the outdoors, we've got plenty of places to explore. Whatever you love, we're sure to have something for you. For all things North Alabama, check out northalabama.org.
Experience the difference at Athens Bible School. The vision and purpose is to provide each student a quality education in a Christ-centered environment to develop the whole person spiritually, mentally, physically, and socially in safe and supportive surroundings. The solid biblical foundation permeates learning and culture in the classrooms and every extracurricular activity.
With six convenient locations to serve you, Bankston Motorhomes is your local RV dealer. They have some of the top brand name RVs for sale at incredible prices. Whether you are looking for an awesome RV for a long-term road trip or a smaller or more lightweight RV for the occasional weekend getaway, Bankston Motorhomes is here to provide you with some outstanding options and deals that you just won't find anywhere else. For more information, go to BankstonMotorhomes.com or visit one of their six convenient locations in Huntsville, Florence, Warrior, Albertville, and Ardmore in Nashville, Tennessee. That's Bankston Motorhomes.
This is Cora White inviting you to tune in every Saturday to Cora's Corner on the Mark White Show.
A little white house in the heart of town.
Hi, everybody. This is Doug Stone. And let me tell you something. Love grows best in little houses, especially when you got the Mark White Show on.
Love grows best in houses just like.
I had a 6 transistor when I was a kid. Under my pillow, I kept it hid. When the lights went out and no one could see, over the airwaves the world came to me. I'd go through the stations till I found a game. I knew how they played by the sounds of their names. The sluggers hit homers, those pitchers threw smoke, and I watched it all on my radio.
Welcome back to the Mark White Show. As advertised, I was going to be talking to some folks with Top End, and right now I have with me Steve Chapman. He is sales specialist with Top End as we have been enjoying the U.S. Paralympics paracycling. And I wanted Steve to be able to share about his role at Top End and then also share a message of encouragement, his story. It's an incredible story. And I just want to welcome Steve to the show right now. Welcome to the Mark White Show, Steve Chapman.
Thank you for having me. This is exciting to be out here and be able to race, but then meet you and be able to be on air and talk a little bit.
It's always interesting to me to think about how the connections are made. So, long story short, Van Booth walked across the country on foot. He was doing it in honor of veterans who had lost their lives, veterans to suicide, and then also for PTSD awareness. He was walking for an organization called Blue Help, which is a resource for law enforcement officers. I was a former police officer, and for first responders. Van Booth sent me a text and asked me if I would be interested in interviewing J.W. Marino. I interviewed J.W. Marino, and he said, I'm coming to Huntsville for the U.S. Paralympics. I want you to come and see me. And so today I was here to see J.W., and then I make the connection with Top End because J.W. says, you might want to talk with them. So I like and appreciate how one person leads to the next,
And here we are now talking to you, Steve, and recognizing some of the work that Top End does when it comes to those who have loss of limb and have had some really challenging situations in their life where they needed some hope. And this equipment gives them some hope. It gives them some encouragement, some inspiration to get out and do some things that maybe some of them thought they would never do.
That's the exciting thing. I truly enjoy my job, being able to do that. As a para-athlete myself, I had my accident back in 1984. That left me a paraplegic. So it really wasn't until I got into sports where I evolved and kind of felt like I wasn't alone in this world. And not that I was alone. I had fantastic, amazing family and friends, but they weren't in wheelchairs. And as soon as I started playing wheelchair basketball, I started meeting all sorts of people, as you just did today. And it's really about that peer mentoring and peer support and being there for one another. And, you know, if there's something I don't know as JW, you know, go talk to him or I'll do the same thing. I may not have the exact same disability, but I know someone that does and lead you in that direction. So it really is helping each other to make it through.
And I don't want anyone to think right now if they're in a situation where they have a challenge and maybe they've done some things that have harmed themselves internally. Maybe they have some things going on when it comes to mental issues, some challenges, depression, other things that are happening. I don't want anyone to think that they're so far stuck in a place where they can't get out, where there is no light at the end of that proverbial tunnel, because there is some hope there. And anybody listening right now that's in a dark place, and you've been there, Steve, yeah, because I read this card that I hold in my hand right now, and you've been in that place, and you know what it's like. Mm-hmm. And there are people out there right now who are in the middle of that battle as we speak.
Yeah, truly. You know, the first few years for me were, I was 19 when I had my accident, and you go from being 6'4 to now I'm sitting down at 4 something, whatever it is. And again, family and friends were amazing and great. But I still felt like I was all by myself and didn't really know that there were things out there for me to do. And a few years after my accident, I was introduced to wwheelchair sports and adaptive equipment. And that, again, is when I started meeting people that said, I understand, I've been there, I've done that. This is how I did it to get through it. And I learned from my original mentor that the key is giving back. You know, he helped me learn and taught and trained and helped. But then one day he's like, come on, you're going with me. And it's like, where are we going? And we went to the rehab hospital. And he literally every week would take a chess board, a backgammon board, and he would go up one day a week and spend a few hours playing backgammon or chess or whatever with the inpatients there and just talking to them. And that was an early lesson for me to learn is, you know, boy, he helped me, but he's helping everyone else. And you know, so I'm here to help people. And hopefully, whenever they're ready to help someone, they'll continue carrying the torch and passing it on.
Exactly. And I mentioned this card that I hold in my hand, a great idea, as you shared as we were eating at Rosie's in Huntsville earlier. You share your story on this card. It went to medical offices. It went to physical therapy offices where those who are in similar situations and need some support, they could read your story, and maybe there might be something within this story that they say, that sounds like where I'm at. And in their darkest moment, they can find some hope, and there's a phone number on there, and they say, you know what, I think I'm going to call Steve Chapman because it sounds like maybe he can help me. And so that's exactly what you did with this card. Yeah. And as we talk about those who are in the same boat, when we talk about the interviews that I've done with Adam Finney, and then with Ricardo and with JW, everybody has a story to share. I have a story to share. There may be some things that I could do to encourage someone from Mark White's perspective. Mm. Obviously, there's something from Steve's perspective that you can share with others too.
Yeah, definitely. And again, for me, that's what it's all about is being able to help someone. And hopefully at some point, they'll remember that someone helped them and they'll be willing to help someone else. And then again, I've truly been blessed to be able to work for Top End. And, you know, now we create adaptive sports equipment for individuals. And so here at the the Huntsville event, I'm a participant and I'm a hand cycle racer, but I'm also specing equipment for those new injured athletes or the one that's ready to upgrade to a different piece of equipment. And so it's not just, you know, sharing my story and stuff like that, but it's also helping them with their equipment and what can we do to tweak their equipment to make them faster. And it's funny because I've had people go, why are you telling me how to get faster? You know, I'm going to beat you. And good for them. I hope they do. You know, that's what it's all about is, you know, if I make you faster, that means I got to work harder to still stay faster than you. So, you know, sharing things. And again, I had the help along the way too. I didn't know it all. I had to go to races and lean on those veteran guys to say, hey, why did you do it this way? Or how can I do this or that? And they were always there to help and share. And so, again, that's what it's about.
And for me, Steve, it was an honor to be able to witness for just a few minutes a small example of that as you were helping a family, as you were helping a young lady, and she's able to get the right equipment for her needs. And that is something to be able to witness and to see a young person especially getting what they need and knowing that they have resources, measuring, making sure everything's right. And that's so important because when that person leaves, they need to feel good about what they have just done. And I saw what Top End can do today, and that was a great opportunity to see that.
Yeah. Again, it's a lot of fun. It's challenging at times because not everyone's the same. You know, so we're making custom sports equipment for the individual to fit them as good as possible. So that, you know, your hand cycle fits you like a nice glove, so to speak. So it becomes part of you when you're out there racing.
And you are able to travel the country now and go to all these various places, get to know people in a unique way. You also are able, as you mentioned, to help them, to equip them for adaptive sports. And I know that has to be a very rewarding occupation as you think about your own life as a young person and playing basketball and how you got started. And you get to deal with people from all walks of life in different periods of their life to help them move forward in this way. I know everybody is not necessarily athletically oriented. There are some people out there who just, it's not to get out here and race people, but they just want to be able to feel like they're living life. And it gives them that opportunity to be able to do some things that otherwise wouldn't be possible.
Yeah, exactly. And not everything we make is based on that racing or that competitive. We've got recreational hand cycles. So if you want a piece of equipment to go ride your bike with the rest of the family. And that's how I got started, is when my son was 4 years old and started to learn how to ride a pedal bike. I was like, I got to figure out how to do this so I can be out there with him. And my first hand cycle was a recreational hand cycle that I rode with my son. And that was the extent of my hand cycling, was going for rides around the neighborhood with my son.
Yeah.
And then, you know, soon met a few other people and then met some racers. And, you know, and again, it's that whole meeting people, and it's amazing how life is a journey and you never know where it's going to take you. And for me, it was, you know, those people that I met that raced, and now I'm hooked into racing and and competitive. And,
yes.
But I still enjoy that regular recreational hand cycle ride. And we've got an all-terrain wheelchair. If you want to go hiking on paths and things like that, we've got a chair for you to do that.
I have done a lot of shows through Challenged Athletes Foundation and Operation Rebound, especially with Nico Marcolongo. And as I think about those that I've interviewed, the connection between them and Top End, I did not realize. But as JW was sharing with me, as he pointed to you and said, Steve Chapman, you need to talk to him, because Top End does have a really good relationship with Challenged Athletes Foundation and Operation Rebound as well.
We do. Yes, there's lots of great foundations out there that are grant funded for individuals that don't have the funding source or the money. And you know, that's the sad thing about adaptive sports equipment, is it's not cheap. And yet we're doing things custom and special, and so not everyone has the money for that, but there are the grants out there, Challenge Athlete, Kelly Brush Foundation, and so we work closely with them so that we can get people into equipment and use their grant dollars to do that.
Absolutely. And Steve, as a sales specialist with Top End, I want to make sure that you have an opportunity to share right now how people can connect. If you want as you mentioned, the resources that you have available to even have someone talk with you. How would you like for someone to connect with you, Steve?
Yeah, probably the best way is to go online, the web, and it's Top End Wheelchairs. If you just Google search that, you'll find Top End Wheelchairs. And on there is our customer service line. That's probably the easiest way to get a hold of customer service, talk to them. And then they refer people to me that have the more in-depth questions that, you know, maybe they can't answer. I'm at a lot of different functions around the United States. Next weekend, I'll be in Boston doing the Boston Marathon. So, you know, I'm at a lot of different shows and a lot of different events, and I'm mingling with people. And again, people know or are getting to know who I am. And so come up and like you saw today, the family came and we fitted a racing wheelchair for her. So that's what I do. I'm the luckiest guy right now.
Congratulations on this 30 plus year journey that you've made from that 19 year old to the 57 year old that sits in front of me today.
Well, and that's, and again, 57 years old, and I believe you may be speaking with Paul Schulte, who also works at Top End. Paul was actually in one of the camps that I did as one of the lead head athletes helping the youth, and I believe he was probably about 14.
Wow.
And now he's one of our engineers at Top End, and so for me, it's, you know, being able to help individuals grow and watch Paul get a scholarship to college to play wheelchair basketball and you know, three-time Paralympian now. And so I'm not at that caliber. I always joke that I'm jack of all trades, master of none. You know, right. I dabble in a lot of different things. And
you know the people who have done those things,
I
though.
Do, you know, and you know, if I'm able to help them along the way to get there,
right,
that's my joy right there.
Why are you helping me get faster? There it is.
There you go.
Exactly why.
Exactly. Yep.
Steve Chapman, thank you for joining me here on the show today, and I am looking forward to speaking to Paul Schulte.
Yeah, very nice.
Folks, Steve Chapman, sales specialist with Top End, and I hope that you'll check it out. Top End Wheelchairs at Invocare.com is where you go to find out more information. Folks, when we come back, we're going to be talking to Paul Schulte. You are listening to The Mark White Show, and I am your host, Mark White.
I watched it all on my radio.
There are moments in life you wish you could capture forever. Alabama the Beautiful is a new online magazine that preserves images from sweet home Alabama. Yours anytime, online, every month. Where the eye captures the moment, and it really does last forever.
Be sure to check out AlabamaTheBeautifulMagazine.com.
Hi, I'm Elena Burt.
I'm Chandler Mordecai.
I'm Harper Howard.
And you're listening to The Mark White Show. Let's find a way to make a difference today.
Is it time for a haircut? Give my friend Philip Butler at Southwind Barbershop a call, located in Rogersville, Alabama. You can call him at 256-247-5658. Make an appointment or just walk in. That's Southwind Barbershop in Rogersville, Alabama.
Thompson Roofing and Construction is a locally owned family business serving the North Alabama and Southern Tennessee area. They are a Better Business Bureau A-plus member since 2011 and a GAF Master Elite Contractor. Give them a call at 256-952-3309 or check them out on the web at 256roofing.com. They offer free inspections.
Thompson Roofing and Construction.
Mr. Cecil Batchelor is the one that started this business as Dependable Service Center. And even though now it's Green's Dependable Hardware and we're a True Value store, our tagline is still Your Dependable Service Center. We've tried to keep that alive for all these years. Mr. Batchelor really started a good business. We're really excited to be carrying on a long-standing tradition. It's the oldest retail store in the city of Russellville. We're Green's Dependable Hardware, 15228 Highway 43 in Russellville, Alabama. We're right behind McDonald's or right across the street from the hospital. Number is 256-331-0123.
The Dependable Service Center.
You're listening to The Mark White Show.
That's a good how do you do.
I love those dear
hearts and gentle people who live in my hometown. Because those dear hearts and gentle people will never, ever let you down.
And we're back. You're listening to The Mark White Show from Huntsville, Alabama. As I recognize Top End and the work that they do for those who need adaptive equipment. And right now I have Steve Zervell. He is an engineer with Top End. Welcome to The Mark White Show, Steve.
Thank you for having me.
Saturday was an incredible day to enjoy the U.S. Paralympics, the cycling that we were able to witness, the time trials, and to be able to talk to so many people. And I've done a lot of interviews now, and getting to know people and their backgrounds and what led them to the U.S. Paralympics. And there's some incredible stories out there.
Yeah, there absolutely is. And everybody is unique. Everybody has a different upbringing and different circumstances that brought them to this event and these types of sports. But yeah, it's pretty awesome. And I feel really fortunate to have met many of the people here. So
let's talk about, Steve, what led you to Top End and what led you to adaptive sports?
Sure. So in 2009, I was involved in a motor vehicle accident. And fortunately, I was the only one negatively affected by that, but I have a spinal cord injury at the C7 vertebrae. And after getting injured, I was just looking for ways to become active again. I grew up on farms and did BMX, skiing, you know, stayed as active as possible outside. That was my thing. So after I got hurt, I just started looking for those outlets again. And that's what led me to adaptive sports. A friend of mine, a mentor at the time, told me about a wheelchair division and the Akron Road Runner Marathon. And from there, I started Googling around. I found a Top End hand cycle, and my family raised some funds for me to be able to purchase that hand cycle and use it in a marathon within first year of being hurt. So I dove right in and started playing wheelchair rugby after getting involved in hand cycling, and went to school for mechanical engineering. And fortunately, where I went to school is near the same city as headquarters for Invacare, and that's the parent company of Top End. So I was able to do some interviews with them, and long story short, through those interviews, as well as a nonprofit called Adaptive Sports Ohio, I was able to meet Paul Schulte, who's now my boss. And just going through school, did some internships down in Florida at Top End, and fell in love with it, fell in love with the people there, the work that they do, and it just aligned with a lot of things in my life that I value, and really the mission of getting people active and showing them that they can live a normal life again too. So
2009, how old were you, Steve?
19.
Yep. So how long did it take you personally to know that there was life on the other side?
So I admittedly, I am someone who values faith quite a bit, and through that faith, I believe that life is valuable regardless of your ability, your lack of, your color, whatever it may be, any kind of background. So I just sort of viewed it as another avenue for me to live a life that was going to have meaning and purpose. But I would say that I started to really see that, I guess, a tangible way that I could live my life again in a normal way was through meeting mentors like Paul and others through those adaptive sports. So within a 2-3 year period is when I really started to see that there were other people out there dealing with the same type of struggles that I have, and we're still living fulfilling lives. So,
and the fact that I was talking to Steve Chapman earlier, Steve grew up on a farm.
Yeah.
He was 19 as well, same age.
Yeah.
You know, so a teenager, you're borderline adult, really, at 19. We have a 20-year-old in our home. You know, you have dreams and ambitions and goals and things of that nature, and the world is yours to take over, right?
Yeah.
And then you have to learn some new things, some new skills that maybe you didn't think you would ever have to learn.
For sure.
And I hope that the message is to people to be prepared, because we don't know where life's going to lead us. And I'm 42, but I could end up in a situation where I have to learn new skills that I never thought I would have to. And if we live long enough, we're going to have some physical challenges.
Yeah.
They may not necessarily put us in a wheelchair or in Paralympics, but at the same time, we need to be prepared and ready and knowing that, okay, this day may come, so that our mind is prepared for whatever circumstance we face.
Agreed. Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes from the values that you hold as an individual? Like, what does it mean to have a life of purpose and meaning? And then from there, as you navigate different struggle, I mean, some are physical, like for us and in these sports, obviously a lot of what we deal with is a very physical thing, but then even behind that physical struggle, there's going to be other things that people have to deal with or we have to deal with. So if you have a good solid foundation to be able to prepare yourself in such a way that when those encounters with different struggles come, you can have a clear perspective on what, why to keep moving forward, you know, it, even when it's hard to, then it doesn't always make it easier, but it makes your willingness to commit to moving forward easier.
When you think about the mechanical engineering and you were pursuing that degree, was it specifically to do this type of work? Or did you think, well, I want to be a mechanical engineer. That's something I've always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And then you went from that direction and then learned, okay, I want to be a part of Top End in this way. Or did you have some path that was leading you to here?
So admittedly, growing up, I was not one who wanted to be in school or anything else. I just wanted to be riding my bike or, you know, working on a farm somewhere, whatever it may be, anything but going to school. So my mom encouraged me to go to post-secondary school for automotive tech, and I did that. I graduated with an associate's degree in automotive tech, worked in a shop for a little over a year, and just decided it wasn't for me. I enjoyed the aspect of cars, but working on other people's cars kind of got old quick. So I was like, I'm just going to go back to school, and because I'm mechanically inclined, I'll go for engineering. And at the time, when I first went back, this is before I was injured, I was thinking that I would go ahead and, you know, go for car design, essentially. And then right after getting hurt and finding adaptive sports, for me, that opened a whole nother avenue where my commitment to what I was going to do was adaptive sports and essentially just bringing more mobility to those with physical disabilities of a variety of types. So right now we do basketball wheelchairs, hand cycles, tennis chairs, and you know, a select grouping of equipment that helps people with physical disabilities. But even long term, my aspirations are for us to even go beyond that if possible, to where if somebody's missing a limb, we're able to help design something to solve that issue. But I mean, those are pipeline dreams where, you know, I'm a part of a group of people that have a like-minded mission to make everyone more capable with what they have. But at the moment, this is, it's entirely fulfilling in what we're able to do with just the products that we have now.
What is the greatest challenge for you as an engineer when you think about this industry and thinking about this idea or dream that you have moving forward? What are the greatest challenges and the hurdles you think about to get over to be able to bring the best equipment to the people who need it the most?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is the cost of the equipment, and just the different challenges that are there as a manufacturer, especially one that's based in the U.S. and focuses the manufacturing within the U.S., there's just a lot of obstacles there in growing our ability to reduce costs of the equipment. And you're meeting a small, not a small demand, but you're not dealing with millions of orders annually. So figuring out creative ways to supply a good product that meets the user's needs in a way that isn't, you know, exponentially out of their price range that they're willing to purchase equipment in. So there's that. And then it's also, I would say, just working with a group of people and making sure that our focus stays on the mission of making people more capable with the equipment that we supply. So it's, you know, it's not a nonprofit business, but it is easy to feel a lot of sympathy for people. And then with that, just trying to balance, you know, how much you're taking care of others in a nonprofit sort of mindset where you're wanting to make sure that they get the right equipment in a reasonable manner, and then the other side of it of making sure that you're taking care of those that you work with as well.
And hopefully there are resources that people can be connected to, like Challenge Athletes Foundations and others, Challenge Athlete Foundation and others, where they can find some funds and be able to afford the equipment that they're wanting or needing.
Yeah, and those groups of people, like those within the Challenge Athletes Foundation, they're priceless. They really are, because they create the avenue for people to not only receive funds to purchase equipment, but they also create an environment where they're able to help teach people the path to, you know, from injury or from introduction to adaptive sports. They're able to help carry them along to the point of, you know, hey, you're involved in the sport. Hey, here's some mentors. Here's other people that are out there living life fully and enjoying every moment of it. So yeah, they're priceless. They really are.
And your passion, your drive to do more and to do better and to excel in this line of work, where have you found that it's most rewarding for you, Steve?
I think in moments when you're able to see somebody experience something like a new degree of freedom within their life, like the first time someone gets on a hand cycle, we have sister companies that make other equipment for those with disabilities, and seeing them, mobility devices, seeing them use that mobility device to enhance their experience in just daily life. Those moments where sort of a switch flips and you can see them like an aha moment of, oh, wow, this is what it feels like to move a basketball chair with my hips or ride the bike, like I had mentioned. All those types of moments are the priceless ones, because then you know that person just had a moment of self-reflection and perspective shift to what else is out there and what kind of experiences they can have.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Steve Zaravel, it's been a real pleasure to have you here on the Mark White Show today. I'm glad that you could make it to Huntsville.
Absolutely.
To be able to talk to us, and we could enjoy the U.S. Paralympics and get to know some of the folks, great folks, that are part of this effort and the guys at Top End. This is very cool that we can talk about this today.
No, absolutely. Thanks for your time. And yeah, anything that we can do to help spread the word for, you know, it's not just about this sport equipment in itself, but just the whole mission behind it and the message of like living that better life. So
getting people out and about.
Yep.
Let them see what their potential is and find the level where they fit.
Yeah, and it doesn't just have to be sport. I mean, it can really be anything. So.
And we're going to be talking to your boss here in just a minute.
Yep.
Paul Schulte.
Yes, sir.
He's coming up, folks.
Yes.
I hope you'll stick with us as we continue the conversation with Paul Schulte with Top End, another engineer. We're glad to be able to do this today. I hope you'll stick with us. You are listening to The Mark White Show, and I'm your host, Mark White.
Who live and love in my hometown. These are my kind of people.
With six convenient locations to serve you, Bankston Motorhomes is your local RV dealer. They have some of the top brand name RVs for sale at incredible prices. Whether you are looking for an awesome RV for a long-term road trip or a smaller or more lightweight RV for the occasional weekend getaway, Bankston Motorhomes is here to provide you with some outstanding options and deals that you just won't find anywhere else. For more information, go to BankstonMotorhomes.com or visit one of their six convenient locations in Huntsville, Florence, Warrior, Albertville, and Ardmore in Nashville, Tennessee. That's Bankston Motorhomes.
North Alabama is full of adventure. If you love food, we've got it. If you love festivals, we've got them. If you love the outdoors, we've got plenty of places to explore. Whatever you love, we're sure to have something for you. For all things North Alabama, check out northalabama.org.
And we're back to have with me Paul Schulte, engineer with Top End. Welcome to the Mark White Show, Paul.
Thank you, Mark. Glad to be here.
I've heard a lot about you so far. Steve Chapman, I was talking to him, and he said, you got to talk to Paul. You got to talk to Paul. Because of your background, because of your knowledge, your experience, I even watched you today as you helped a young lady from Hoover, Alabama, to get outfitted with some equipment. And it was an honor for me to be able to watch that and see how you related to the customer and you could connect and get the person, the individual, what they wanted and what they needed.
Sure. Yep. Well, definitely glad to be here. And this is part of the way we live. You know, each one of us that's athletes with disabilities, we get involved with an adaptive sport. Something clicks, a particular sport. You get connected to mentors and all of a sudden just new opportunities and new avenues start opening up. And so it's an honor for us each time we get to interact with a young athlete to encourage them on their way, hear about their goals, and then do our best to provide equipment that helps them get there.
If someone heard the name Paul Schulte and they're in the Paralympian community, and then paracycling more specifically, you've done some pretty amazing things as a Paralympian. From what Steve was telling me, winning some championships in that arena.
I was involved in the sport of para wheelchair basketball, and I was involved with the national team for just a little over 18 years, and so I got to travel to international countries, play in 3 Paralympic Games in Sydney, Beijing, and London. And it was a wild ride. So where I grew up, my first opportunity to play adaptive sports was with wheelchair basketball. And I was really fortunate to begin in an environment full of a bunch of Hall of Famers. And when I first showed up as a teenager, they blocked my shot, took the ball, and I loved every second of it. So yeah, my background with adaptive sports is obviously strong with wheelchair basketball. But I've also, in my later years now, started to enjoy paracycling and plan to do it for a long time.
How does that background help you to connect with those that you're helping today, that especially the younger people, like the young lady today, to be able to connect? And you've had that background of being able to be at that point and to say,
sure,
this is something that's possible.
Well, I think that really the background that comes for me is that having played the number of years that I have, I got hurt when I was 10 and then started playing wheelchair basketball when I was 14. And I think part of that background is that I know what it feels like for a piece of equipment to fit you like a glove and for it to respond even if you only turn your shoulders a little bit, which is what you want. And I also know what it feels like to get a piece of equipment that's just a little bit off. And so so that's part of what, you know, drives me to try to get as good of a fit for each athlete as I can, because I know what that feels like. And then in addition, it kind of completes the circle, because I was the beneficiary of so many great role models that it's exciting to, in a small way, kind of complete that circle and give to that next generation that are doing amazing things in their own right. So.
Yes, and as I think about some of the interviews that I was able to do coming to the Paralympics on Saturday to have people share with me different ages, different backgrounds, you know, and you're one of the youngest at 10 years old that would have been affected, because we had 19, I had 23.
Sure.
And my daughter that's laying there asleep right now, she's 8 years old, and so 2 years older than her, yep. be about the fifth, sixth grade, somewhere in that time frame.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And life-changing for a young person who was able to get around and go out on the playground and play with all the equipment before, and now adaptive equipment was necessary for you to be able to move forward.
Sure. And for me in particular, you know, sports was everything to me before I got hurt. And so right after the fact, I was like, they in the hospital, they said, you know what, you were so into sports beforehand, you should really get into adaptive sports, into wheelchair sports. And I was like, no, thank you. Not even a little bit interested, because I didn't think it was going to be very...
Even as a 10-year-old,
wow. I had a negative stereotype that adaptive sports was going to not be very competitive, that it wasn't going to be very athletic, and that equaled not much fun. And so I said, thank you very much. I want to get back to my playground and my friends. And I did. But it took about 4 years for, you know, circumstances to change, my buddies to be able to start to jump up, grab the rim. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to... This is always going to be fun for me, but I'm only going to have so much fun with it, and there's only so far I'm going to be able to progress just playing with my able-bodied friends. And then so when I turned 14 and I got an invitation to go practice with a bunch of adults, I thought, okay, well, adults aren't going to show up just for a participation medal. They're probably going to be competitive, and I'll probably have no chance. And that actually appealed to me. I was like, I want a serious challenge. I want athleticism, competitiveness, and I had never dreamed what the Paralympics was really about for athletes, with, you know, being the premier athletic event globally for athletes with physical disabilities. It opened up a whole new world to me of meeting people both from our country as well as internationally, that while we didn't speak the same language, we spoke the same language of, not to over-dramatize it, but I suppose it is. We spoke the same language of transcending suffering. So you go through something really difficult, a debilitating injury or disease, and everyone that you know and love wouldn't blame you one bit to just relax and chill and back away from your dreams and just kind of live a quiet, sheltered life the rest of your life. But every single one of these individuals from around the globe chose to stick their neck out, chose to go for something more. And there's that resonates, I think, with everyone globally, to meet somebody that you perceive to have a rougher road than you, but that who chooses to do three times as much stuff as you do. And even for athletes with disabilities, the same thing happens. You meet somebody that can't feel their hands, doesn't have any hands, and yet they're more well-adjusted and they're doing more with their life than you are. And you really kind of check yourself going, well, what's my problem? And so, you know, that's one of the beauties of the adaptive sport and Paralympic movement.
We sat at the table together and had supper. And as I think about you talking about the connections around the world, we had Russia, we had Colombia, we had Mexico, all represented at that table as we ate together. And yep. So I can see that on a small scale, us coming together in that way and those representations of places around the world.
Yeah. Yeah. There's almost an unspoken language to it of just respect, nodding at each other, recognizing. And in many cases, I mean, here in the United States, we are, many of us, I mean, I'm 43 years old and I'm very aware that my life is a product of, in part, the Americans with Disabilities Act, the legislature and the accessibility that's been built into our culture now that does not exist in all countries around the world. And so there's almost a, you know, there's a reverence and respect for those that overcome even more daunting circumstances to choose athletics and compete at a high level and represent their country. So it's special stuff.
And Paul, I think I want, through this show, and one of the things I've tried to do is have people who are quote unquote able-bodied to appreciate ADA and appreciate the circumstances for other people and think about, okay, I could be in that same boat as quickly as they were. None of us are immune. Right. None of us. Anybody yeah. listening right now, that may be their future. I don't want someone to have to go through these challenges, but I can tell you this. I've talked to enough people that tell me at times that they were a better person for what they went through. And after they lost that limb, after they became what they never wanted to become, they became a better person for it, and they would not change anything about their life at that point.
I'm one of those people, so I can honestly say that I wouldn't go back and change anything. That while it was tough at first, and it took a while, it took years to really adapt to it, it's been a blessing in my life and not a tragedy, period.
And I want to recognize the seed planter, because you mentioned somebody when you were 10 years old in the hospital, they did plant that seed. Yes. Now, in that moment, it didn't work for you. But 4 years later, because that seed was planted. So I'm saying that if we are seed planters, we may not see the results immediately. Somebody may reject what we're trying to tell them. I may say, look, you need to talk to my folks at Challenged Athletes Foundation, or you need to talk to Operation Rebound. They say, no way, that's not what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
you've planted the seed, so maybe later on they go and check it out, and they say, okay, I need this.
Yeah, that's a natural response, and is to just say, hey, I want to get as close back to my... You know, real adversity strikes the way that you define yourself, and so it's natural for all of us to want to get right back as close to the same life as we can, and that's fine and that's good. And when the time is right and appropriate, if you are unable to reconnect with the passion that you have, whether or not it's sports or it's something creative in arts, then it's just a matter of time before you kind of have a quiet moment of realizing, hey, I probably need to reach out to somebody that is, you know, that has gone this path before and can help connect me with resources and good role models to help me connect with it in a better way than I have been. So it's a great thing to be part of.
How about this engineering realm where you're at? You earned an engineering degree.
Yes, sir.
What were your thoughts behind earning that degree? What were you going to do with it?
I come from a family of kind of a technical background, and so I knew I wanted to do something technical, and really I wanted kind of at first I wanted to do robotics. I wanted to do some things that were really high tech, and I had a chance to do that, and then when this opportunity popped up to be able to work in adaptive sport, to work at a company like Invacare and Top End that does adaptive sports products, I really jumped at it. I was like, hey, this is adaptive, but it's almost inherently adaptive equipment with a goal attached. You know, as soon as you jump in a basketball chair or a tennis chair or a hand cycle, that box shows up. I lived it myself, where the big box shows up in the driveway off a big truck, and to everyone that receives a new piece of adaptive sporting equipment, it represents an instant improvement in quality of life. It just does. There's a lot of hopes behind that box. Yes. You take it out, and all of a sudden, there's a good chance you can do something you couldn't do before, and that you can work really hard at it and add another 10 skills to it. So it's a really neat thing to be part of, and I've benefited from my education in engineering, and then being able to apply it to something that is just in my blood now has been a tremendous opportunity.
And thinking about adaptive sports, the field you're in is always adapting, overcoming, finding new ways to do things. Things are changing. You're trying, as Steve mentioned, talking about costs and trying to make it affordable, as affordable as possible for people who need this.
Exactly. You know, it's not, adaptive sporting equipment is not considered, it's treated differently in different countries, but here in the United States, it's not considered medically necessary, which is kind of like, you scratch your head like, well, wait a second. A sedentary lifestyle is not healthy for anybody. And certainly not the least of which would be people with physical disabilities. You get into a sedentary lifestyle and all kinds of things can start to go wrong with your body. And I think it's well documented that physical activity is good for everybody. But then over and above that, the physical activity is important, but the mentors and role models that you connect with through adaptive sports are just as important for you socially, emotionally, and figuring out good ways, good techniques and tricks on how to do simple everyday things like, how can you get in your car really quickly in the rain? How can you work? Can you do all these things? So maybe Stephen mentioned it, but my favorite stat is there was a study done by the University of Houston about employment and adaptive sports, and it said that of all the wheelchair users in the United States, 18% of them are employed, fully employed actively. And that number jumps to 57% if they've been involved in adaptive sport. That's a staggering number, to go from 18% employed to 57% employed. And I, you know, that's kind of a tangent, but I remember hearing that the founder of the Paralympics, he said one of his goals was for people with disabilities to be able to pay taxes. He was like, because that would be evidence of them living a active, independent, right, active lifestyle and a contributing citizen. So anyway, that's a lot. I can go on and on about
adaptive
sports.
No, that's a great point. Yeah.
But it's one of the beautiful parts about it, and it's not yet considered medically necessary. So the cost of adaptive sports is significant. I mean, we're trying to design it and manufacture it right here in the United States of America, and in post-COVID sourcing materials, et cetera. So it's a challenge. It's a challenge every day, but it's one that ultimately our lives have been impacted by those that did it before. And so we consider it an honor to do it again.
And I could make a couple of points about the sedentary life. Obviously, someone who's struggling, for the most part, they're going to use those 20 sessions with a psychologist or a psychiatrist, which insurance allows maybe 20 a year. And then they're also going to have to use some other insurance for other physical ailments that they're going to end up having. So it is cost effective to look and say, what can we do to be proactive, as opposed to letting someone just have to use the insurance part of the system because of the health issues they're going to acquire.
When you weigh the costs of two nights of hospital stay and significant medical assistance against the cost of an active lifestyle, it's the scales tip towards a couple nights in the hospital pretty quickly. So it is something that we take seriously, that we love, and we find it to be a happy way to live. So we go after it, and we try to help everybody else that is too.
And Paul, as we close out, let's have an encouraging message for someone who may be struggling right now, who needs some encouragement from the community. They don't realize that it's out there. They don't know about Challenged Athletes Foundation. They don't know about Top End. They haven't gotten to that point yet. We're trying to take them there right now through this show. If somebody's listening, they love somebody who has just been in an accident, sure, and they're thinking, what can I do for this individual I love?
Yeah. I guess my piece of encouragement would be is, number one, we recognize that, you know, my disability was a car accident. I'm a paraplegic, and so my legs are paralyzed, and it's very visible. You can see me, that you can see the challenge that I'm up against. We also recognize that there's a variety of different things that impact people, whether that's chronic pain or diabetes. I mean, there's a number of things that you can't see that somebody's dealing with. So I would just say that if somebody feels like they are dealing with something physically that is debilitating, and they just are having a hard time getting out of their house and being active and finding their niche, you know, I believe that our bodies were designed to move and that they respond well to an increased heart rate, learning a new skill, getting a bit stronger, and as you participate in an adaptive sport, all of a sudden it gets easier to transfer in and out of your own bed, in and out of your own car, those types of activities. So number one, I guess I would just say to all the individuals out there would be that, number one, it feels like there's 10 times more adaptive activities now than there was when I got started 30-some years ago.
We're close to the same age. I'm 42, about to be 43
okay.
myself.
Yeah, yep. So I tried adaptive sports just about 30 years ago, and now there's so many more. So I guess the message I would say is that whatever your passion is, that at the time now feels like it's obscured and you can't see the path that leads to an active, healthy lifestyle that you want to live, I would just say that whatever your passion is, there's an adaptive version of it. I don't care if it's art, music, sports, a particular sport, there's something out there. And in the modern age of YouTube and Google, you can search. You can search on your web browser for adaptive fill in the blank as far as the sport or the activity. And so number one, just know that something good exists. And then number two, know that there are good, caring people in communities and organizations that day after day are trying to inform the general public that these things exist, they're safe, they're going to be challenging, but they're worth engaging in, and they're worth programatizing, putting into programs for states and governments to get behind. These things are good. These things are real. We can be active, just like anybody else.
Paul Schulte, thank you for joining me here on the Mark White Show today.
Thank you, Mark.
Folks, here on the Mark White Show, we're recognizing difference makers and sharing their stories to encourage and inspire. I hope that you are encouraged and inspired by the story that you're hearing today, the stories that you're hearing, and that you will share this with your family, your friends, your neighbors. Let them know about this show and what we're doing to make a difference in our communities around the country and the world. I want you to follow The Mark White Show on Facebook and Instagram, and then subscribe to The Mark White Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts. You have been listening to another edition of The Mark White Show, and this is Mark White, encouraging you to find your purpose by making a difference in someone's life today.
Oh, won't you hear me, people, when I say, well, let's all do something good today.